And we're back on Inside Black and Gold. Mike has returned to the shelf behind me. And we're going to bring in, I said Mr. Kellen Mond. If you find him on Twitter, it's the Kellen Mond. Because he is the Kellen Mond. And, you know, he's an interesting guy. And I vividly remember him at Texas A&M because it was the most insane game. And before we get into this conversation, because I do ask him about that game. So all of these things happened in that LSU Texas A&M game. It was the finale of the 2018 season. The final score was 74-72. There were seven overtimes. It was Joe Burrow versus Kellen Mond. Keep in mind, seven overtimes. You had to go for two after the second overtime. So they matched every single time. One of those, they both failed to get a two-point conversion. One of those, they both kicked field goals. One of those, there was a one-handed catch in the end zone. Kellen Mond completed a 19-yard touchdown pass that the ball was snapped with 1 second on the clock. Grant Delpit intercepted a ball that appeared to end the game, and Ed Ogeron got a Gatorade bath only for the refs to overturn that because Kellen Mond's knee hit the ground before he threw it. So this was with about, 30 seconds left in the game in the fourth quarter. So there was a preemptive Gatorade bath, which can you imagine how uncomfortable Ed Ogeron was for all seven overtimes as he was sticky with Gatorade? It wasn't water. It was Gatorade. And that game went on for like two more hours. I know because I was sitting by myself in the NOLA.com newsroom as waiting for the game to end so I could do my post-game stuff because I was working for them at the time. I think I was there till like 2:45 in the morning. Foster Moreau was on the LSU for that game. And he caught a touchdown in the fourth quarter. Eric McCoy was the center for Kellen Mond in that game. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the running back, threw a touchdown pass in the fifth overtime. Seven overtimes, neither QB threw for 300 yards. Kellen Mond had six touchdowns. Joe Burrow was LSU's leading rusher with 100 yards and three rushing touchdowns. Justin Jefferson was LSU's leading receiver, five catches, 63 yards, and a touchdown. This was LSU's final loss prior to 2019. So Kellen Mond is officially the last college quarterback to beat LSU. And LSU had a 99.1% chance to win the game with 1:16 left in the fourth quarter.
Oof.
And I know this is a Saints podcast, but like that's Kellen Mond. Like that game was so epic that they literally were like, we can never allow this to happen again. And they changed the overtime rules to make sure that it, like after the second overtime, it's just a competition of 2-point conversion attempts.
Right. Yeah.
So anyway, he changed the game. That's Kellen Mond's college legacy. He played two more seasons after that because of COVID, got drafted in 2021 in the third round by the Vikings, whose offensive coordinator was Clint Kubiak. So again, we talked about this in the first segment, links galore. And you draft someone in the third round, you don't do that on a whim. You do that because you really like them. The Saints haven't drafted a quarterback in the third round since Garrett Grayson.
Ugh.
Like, if taken, guys, take them in the fourth round. So, yeah, Kellen Mond, what are your initial kind of reads on that Kellen Mond signing? And then we'll get into the interview.
Obviously, you start looking into things. You see the connections with the coaching staff. Also, the Texas A&M connection, obviously, with Dennis Allen. You know, he loves his Aggies. But, yeah, to me, at first, I was kind of scratching my head going, all right, they just brought in Nathan Peterman. They're adding another quarterback here. But then I was like, all right, maybe they want more of that mobile QB look for the defense to help them out as well.
Yeah, my initial read is like, there's your competition, Jake Kaner, right? Like this, Nathan Peterman got brought in, I think camp arm, right? I think a guy that can help Derek Carr kind of, you know, work and install the offense and throw some passes, you know, be a live arm. But I didn't really see him as competition for Jake Kaner. Kellen Mond, I do think, is legitimate competition for Jake Kaner. And we're going to see that play out. We'll talk a little more about this after the interview.
It's not too long ago since he was drafted, right?
Right. He's going into his fourth year. Anyway, without further ado, let's get into that interview. We'll come back and talk about it at the end of
the
segment.
The newest Saints quarterback, Kellen Mondo. Welcome to New Orleans. And hey, welcome back down south, man.
Hey, what's up? I'm glad to be back down south, finally.
just talk about, obviously, I know Clint Kubiak being the new offensive coordinator for you had to be a big draw getting drafted in Minnesota when he was over there. But what else attracted you to the New Orleans Saints?
Yeah, obviously Clint being one of the main guys who wanted me in Minnesota, and then him getting another opportunity down here in the South. And, you know, you hear about the culture down here in New Orleans, you know, what these fans are like. You know, you see the stability that they have, you know, within the front office, and, you know, just really trying to build a winning culture and see how I can come and fit and really just help in any way that I can.
You know, Kellen, it is interesting because we spent all this time talking about Clint Kubiak. We've been talking about Clint Kubiak for months now, but, you know, we haven't even had an interview with him. We haven't really even heard him talk. So I think you'd be able to give us some good insight. What is Clint like as a coach? What should Saints fans be expecting from their new offensive coordinator?
I mean, Clint is honestly great and, you know, someone who's been really experienced and, you know, he's coached under his dad and the Gary Kubiak tree with, you know, Shanahan and those guys. And he's pretty much been all around. So I think he's just phenomenal in being able to attack coverages, you know, give quarterbacks, you know, clean reads and, you know, pretty much find ways to get, you know, Kamara and, you know, Shahid and Olave and these guys just the ball in their hands with space. And, you know, he did a great job my rookie year, you know, getting Thielen and Justin Jefferson the ball so I could see some type of resemblance of being able to find creative ways to get some of these weapons the ball.
Now, Kellen, I just want to be upfront with you right here. When we told you that, I told my co-host here, Jeff, that you were coming on for this interview, he said, man, I can't wait to talk to him. I sure got a bone to pick with Kellen Mond. Tell him why, Jeff.
Oh, well, so yeah, we can go back in time.
LSU game or something?
Yeah, you caught me. Well, we'll go back in time. So I've worked at the Times-Picayune for several years, and I'm sitting there by myself in the newsroom at 2 in the morning watching one-handed touchdown catches in the fifth overtime of a game. And I'm like, why won't you let this game die? You know, the amazing thing to me is when you look back, you can write your name in the record books as being the last college quarterback to ever beat Joe Burrow. And obviously, we know what that turned into. I am curious, you know, what are your memories of that game? Because even I went back and watched the highlights of it today. It's just wild, all of the things that happened. The touchdown with the last second on the clock. Obviously, the knee who went down, and then they overturned it. It was fascinating. But what are your memories from that game?
Yeah, I mean, arguably the greatest game in, you know, college football history. And obviously, me, Joe Burrow, Justin Jefferson, and mm-hmm. Jamar, and a bunch of guys who have been able to Eric McCoy was in that game as well. So, yeah, I mean, it was a phenomenal game. And, you know, it was really an average game the first three quarters. And mm-hmm. then, you know, the fourth quarter just kind of turned up. And then just pretty much madness for seven overtimes. So it's rare you're going to be able to resemble a game like that.
Kellen, when you mentioned Eric McCoy, what's it like getting to be, you know, back in the locker room with him again? I'm sure you're looking forward to that.
Yeah, I haven't spoke to him yet. I'm glad to be back in the locker room with him and, you know, someone who I was close to when I was at Texas A&M. And even Cesar Ruiz, he was my high school center at IMG. So two of the big boys up front I'm really close to.
Yeah, are you aware that all of the Texas A&M connections on this roster? I mean, Dennis Allen, Texas A&M, Clint Kubiak, Texas A&M, obviously Eric. I know you were high school teammates with Caesar. Is that, you know, when you end up on a team with a lot of players from the same college, right? Like the Saints have had that with Ohio State for a long time. There's still a lot of Ohio State guys. Does it kind of become like a brotherhood in the locker room of like, that's the school, or does it, yeah, the further you get away, does that kind of disappear a little bit?
You know, it may disappear a little bit, I think, you know, especially with guys you play with. But, you know, Texas A&M being one of the largest traditional colleges, you know, they always say Aggies take care of Aggies. So, yeah, there's definitely a tradition. And I guess you could definitely say it adds some comfortability within the locker room. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's a business and, you know, everyone has a job and, you know, we're all coming together to accomplish one goal.
Don't know how familiar you are with this roster, but obviously guys like a Chris Olave, Rashid Shaheed at wide receiver, just how anxious are you to get a little bit of work in with them?
Yeah, I mean, you know, probably besides Tyreek Hill and Waddle, probably the next group of fastest guys on the field, you know, just me playing against them when I was in Cleveland and then when I was in Indy last year. So I've seen both of those guys up front in person, and, you know, just as talented as, you know, some of the best guys in the league. So, you know, I think Clint's going to do a great job, and, you know, what Keith is going to be able to do with the receivers. So I'm definitely looking forward to it.
Have the coaches at all kind of indicated, hey, this is what our vision is for you in this offense? Obviously, there should be something of a comfortability with the scheme, given that you worked in it as a rookie. But, you know, you're coming into a room with Nathan Peterman, Jake Haener, and obviously Derek Carr. You know, what is that kind of like when you show up and you want to compete for a job, but also, you know, it's installing an offense for the first time. So there has to be some level of okay, hey, we're all on the same page here, right?
Yeah, you know, obviously nothing is ever promised, you know, especially in this league. You know, I'm just thankful to get an opportunity to be able to compete for a backup job. And, you know, that's something that's really all you want, to be able to, you know, put yourself into position to play and be ready to play. You know, if Derek ever went down or, you know, any other situations, you know, you don't really want any drop off. You want to be able to go in and be able to operate within the offense and, you know, be able to put points up on the board and at the end of the day win. So that's definitely the main goal.
Kellen, curious, you have any ties in New Orleans? I know you're a Texas guy, but any family, friends here, or have you been to the city before visiting, before signing with the team? Have you visited before?
You know, I was running AAU track, and we used to run track meets out here in New Orleans, but, you know, really in recent years, I've never been down. But, you know, it's kind of funny. It's one of the few places, and, you know, my dad has kind of always said there's no place like New Orleans. And, you know, it seems like everyone's got, you know, different accents down here. And but, yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to the food and the culture while I'm down here.
Yeah, I sound like a Yankee. I'm a New Jersey transplant. I've been down here since 2000.
Oh, yeah. So, it's definitely a 180. You know, I'm from the South. I'm from right. San Antonio, and I'm living in Houston now. And so, you know, I'm somewhat used to a culture. It's definitely a 180 for you being from New Jersey.
Got you. Now, Kellen, you know, since obviously the last time like Louisiana fans probably will be familiar with what you've done would be at Texas A&M. And so I guess my question is, from that time to now, from your senior year in college to your fourth year in the NFL, what has changed about your game? What have you improved? Where have you seen yourself become a better quarterback over the span of those years?
You know, I think one of the main things is improving mechanically. And, you know, I think it's always something when you come out of college, you're always trying to find, you know, small things to get better at once you get in the league. And, you know, the margin for, you know, greatness and, you know, with quarterbacks is really such a small margin. And so you're always trying to find small ways to get better. And I think, you know, one thing that you really can't replicate in college is just operational skills. And that's something that you kind of just get better at once you get in the league, once you start getting reps. And so just having comfortability in the offense and being able to you know, be able to check at the line of scrimmage, get into good plays, you know, get out of bad plays, and just be able to operate, you know, at a high level. It's definitely something that I've improved on since college, but also being a rookie.
Gotcha. And, okay, last question from me here. You know, it goes back to your rookie year again, just because, you know, suddenly the NFC South is littered with former Vikings, you know, and I am curious when you see Kirk Cousins land in Atlanta, obviously a guy you were teammates with in 2021. What is your kind of reaction to that? How do you think that's going to work out for them?
I mean, I think it's going to be great. I've nothing, honestly, nothing but positive things to say about Kirk. And, you know, you hear a lot about, you know, rookie quarterbacks, you know, getting into, you know, quarterback rooms that aren't great. And, you know, me and Kirk and, you know, Sean Mannion, who was there, you know, I couldn't be thankful enough for being able to be in that type of locker room, be in that type of quarterback room with those guys and be able to learn. So, you know, they definitely got a lot of talent over there. And, you know, looking forward to Kirk having a good season coming off an Achilles injury.
All right. Thanks again to Kellen for coming on. And, you know, I do appreciate these kind of like post-signing interviews, whether I'm part of them or not. Because, you know, it's funny because, you know, you watch a player, you kind of feel like you know a player, but you don't really know their personality until you kind of talk to him for a little bit. I think Kellen is you can tell he's a quarterback.
Right.
You know, because when you talk to quarterbacks, they're a little more polished in terms of how they answer questions. And, you know, I thought he the way he's approaching it is good. And obviously, you know, he's got a ton of insight on Clint Kubiak and how Clint Kubiak wants to operate. I think he would have still been in Minnesota with the Vikings had Clint not, or had Pat Shurmur not been fired after 2021, because then the whole staff got wiped out and they moved on and he latched on elsewhere. He was with the Browns. And so, I mean, clearly Clint likes him because he brought him in again. So, right. You know, I think it's going to be interesting to see how that develops. But if it comes down to, okay, who has the better grasp on the offense that we're trying to run and who's going to back up the quarterback that missed the end of three games last year? I mean, I wouldn't bet against Kellen.
No, and like we've talked about it a little bit, the fact that, you know, you got a whole new coaching staff. Obviously, these guys have no kind of loyalty or kinship, whatever you want to say, to a Jake Haener. It's like, this isn't the guy I wanted. Whereas, you know, with this situation, it is someone that they drafted, were part of the draft in Minnesota to land Mond. And like I said, I'm interested to see what he can do in this backup role. Also curious to see how much he can help the defense getting those looks against the more mobile quarterback. I know folks are going to want to point to Taysom Hill being a mobile guy too, but he, not like really that, you know, if you know what I mean?
And he's not running scout team.
Yeah, exactly.
He's got other stuff to worry about.
There's no one up in arms that Kellen Mond's taking number two?
Quarterback number.
Where's the right? Jameis Hive?
How disrespectful to Mr. Jameis Winston. Played his heart out. I like Jameis. But again, yeah, just it's quarterback number. I had a train of thought.
Sorry, I wiped it out.
Jake Haener is in the same situation that Kellen Mond was in heading into the 22 season. Like the guy who, you know, the offensive coordinator who probably championed him as a pick is no longer here. So sure, he could win the favor of the new offensive coordinator, but it's not a guarantee, not by any stretch. And so like we're going to, you know, one of the segments I want to do or an episode I want to do after the draft, once we get kind of a better picture of the depth at a lot of these positions, is okay, what are the top training camp battles? And I can tell you right now that backup quarterback's going to be one of the top training camp battles. I mean, there's no question about it to me. And I think that's what I kind of put Nathan Peterman at the back end of that conversation. And Derek Carr is going to start, like, for better or worse. We know that. But those two guys, that's a straight up competition to me.
Yeah. And of course, there's going to be the question mark, I guess, still of will Taysom be an emergency go to guy that, you know, could fill in at quarterback, or are they strictly going to keep him in that utility role and not really pursue that? Because there was a time at practice, I think, was it last year? Was like, no, he's just going to be all at tight end. And there was a time where he was warming up with the QBs.
See, I think that just kind of from a practicality perspective, having Taysom on the roster, if carrying a third quarterback that's not Taysom feels like you're wasting Taysom's ability in terms of like how often are you going to get to that third quarterback, right?
Correct.
And you could have, you know, there's the emergency third quarterback thing. You could take advantage of that more often. But I don't know. Like, I kind of feel like one of the luxuries of having Taysom Hill is that you can comfortably carry two quarterbacks and not worry like, oh, what happens if they both get hurt? Because worst case scenario, you know, who are you better? Like, if you, who's that third quarterback going to be? Are you going to feel more comfortable with them coming in, running a limited game plan, or with Taysom coming in and running the offense that he already runs anyway? I would guess when I say competition, I think the other one gets cut, right? Like, I don't think you're going to carry three quarterbacks. Right. I think you're going to carry Derek Carr, one of Kellen Mond or Jake Haener, and then you're probably going to drop the other one to the practice squad, assuming they clear waivers. And I think you're going to feel good about it. So it's just, it's like these guys are going to play to make the roster. And there's nothing that a fourth round pick should feel entitled to going into year two. Now, I think he was entitled to a roster spot in year one, because as a rookie, there has to be some grace given to a guy that's literally learning how to play at the NFL level. I don't think you're going to get that same level of grace this year. He's got to stand up and be better than Kellen in an offense that Kellen already kind of understands. And that's what makes it, you know, that first roster projection, I'm going to have a hard time deciding between those two guys. But right now I probably lean toward Kellen, just because that kind of institutional knowledge is going to be tough for Jake to match. And especially like one of your biggest jobs as a backup quarterback is kind of being a sounding board for the starting quarterback, helping him install game plans, like go through tape, you know, work on stuff. And who's going to be better at that? Probably the guy who's been in this offense for a full season. So, you know, I don't think we need to go into it a ton more than there. But I am interested to see how he looks out of camp, because if he goes out and looks bad, then that kind of, and Jake kind of builds on his rookie season, which I don't think was terrible. I think he was solid and he had a really rough end to it in that final preseason game. You know, like I'm not saying that Jake can't go out and win the job, but I think that he's going into a race against a guy who has a bit of a head start.
Right. That familiarity you kind of talked about. So you totally taking Peterman out the mix?
Yes.
I guess you can never say never, right?
I mean, there's a chance that he ends up being the practice squad quarterback, right? Like, what if he goes out and he looks good? I don't think he's really in the mix to be the backup. I think it's one of those two guys. But what if the person who loses the backup job also just plays terribly or gets claimed on waivers, right? Yeah. What if Kellen Mond beats out Jake Haener, you cut him, and the Eagles claim him, right? someone claims him because they're like, hey, I like his profile, you know, Broncos, right? What if the Broncos claim him because Pete Carmichael's like, hey, Sean, I like this guy. He fits what we want to do, right? And then Nathan Peterman becomes that practice squad guy because you do want one of those guys. And Jake, you know, it doesn't always have to be Jake Luton, even though it often seems to be. So I think that's where I would put Nathan Peterman in that mix.
Yeah, just like you mentioned, the QB2 battle, something at training camp we really, I don't want to say didn't monitor, but wasn't something that you were so intent on keeping tabs on.
We knew Jameis was going to be the backup last year. It was really just like, okay, we'll watch Jake to see how he does.
Right.
But he really, you know, he didn't get a ton of reps in team drills because you're just, you know, you're pretty solid on Jameis. And yeah, but you know, and that's going to be a fun position battle to watch because it's right in your face. Like,
yeah,
you're going to see Kellen Mond throw. You're going to see Derek Carr throw with the ones, and you're going to see Kellen Mond throw with the twos. And then you're going to see Jake Haener throw with the twos and or threes. Right. And it'll be really easy to tell who's leading because who goes with the twos and who goes with the threes, right? If they're alternating day to day, kind of like Paulson Adebo and Alante Taylor were last year, then you're like, okay, they're even. But at some point, someone's going to take control of that. Who gets into the preseason game first? You know, so it's in some position battles like offensive line, other than where they go in the scheme of things, it's tough to gauge how they're doing, especially without pads. Quarterback, you could from day one, you're going to be like, okay, how did Jake look? How did Kellen look? And, you know, it's going to make training camp more fun, in my opinion, because a lot of times those third team drills are just like, eh, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. You're kind of like in the day, you know, la la land, thinking about getting my water or when's this practice ending.
Well, that won't be the case this year because we'll be in
true, right?
Irvine. We won't need a cooling tent out there, but
no, definitely not.
All right. Anything else you want to add before we move on here?
No, just wishing Mon the best. Seemed like a good guy, and just curious to see, like you were mentioning too, this is a legit competition to monitor, obviously.
Yeah, and one other thing before we go, you know, we're not going to get into this in our conversation with Eric, but one of the things he talked about, which I think is a good point, is like you really don't see players, you know, these kind of second, third round picks that aren't ready to be starters right away, but like you don't really get to see players sit for 3-4 years behind a veteran and get better and then go into the game, right? Like, and then get a chance to be a starter. It's rare. It's either you're a starter, you're believed to be a starter right away, or you're a career backup and you're never really going to be seriously thought about as a starting quarterback. And you used to have that. You used to have guys like Jake Delhomme, right? Tom Brady. I mean, he didn't wait that long, but he was not a guy that you drafted as a starter, right?
Sure,
and
not,
you don't
right.
really see that. And I think you know, Brock Purdy, would he, if not for the injuries that befell the 49ers, he may never have gotten a chance as a starter in the NFL, right? So I don't know. It's kind of funny because one of the reasons I think there's so few long-term, like there's so few starting quarterbacks. Like it feels like you have like 3 or 4 new starters in the NFL every year. And then a bunch of teams that just can't figure it out. And some guys, they don't have that ability. Mike Glennon is never going to be an NFL starter. He was never going to be an NFL starter. They even tried him. It didn't work out, but he's a good backup. You know, and so like there's really not a ton of development at the quarterback position in modern football because there's such pressure to be good right away. There's such pressure to be a starter or nothing right away. And so, yeah, that's all I got.
No, it's just like, you know, you talk about drafting all these young guys too and high on drafts, and you got to worry about that lack of success early on and how much will it damage their psyche and, you know, influence them going forward. The quarterback position is totally tough to get right.
And I do appreciate the irony that is me saying that after going through this long spiel about how I think Jake Haener probably could get cut at the end of this offseason after spending a fourth round pick, and because you're not giving him that chance either. But, you know, it is, you got to pick one. So that's it. But all right.
I mean, I don't think that's crazy, though, either, because it wasn't like Jake Haener was drafted as this high end prospect for you. You was someone that you thought enough that you were interested in bringing in, a guy that, okay, you had the same college too as Derek Carr, maybe a little interesting there, but it definitely wasn't something that sold you on the talent that you saw that you wanted to develop.
No, it's not like this is like the Titans taking Malik Willis and then turning around immediately drafting Will Levis. Like, that's a different situation, but not that much different. Either way, let's wrap up that segment. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about tight ends in the first round. First round. I don't know. Could have been half Jim Moore there. All right. This is Inside Black and Gold. I'm Jeff Nowak. He's Steve Geller. Please subscribe. We'll be right back.